we come now to our guest speaker, who is Malcolm Wells, MBE. He is the national speaker for Canine Partners. And I'm not going to tell you any more than that, because here he is now, strolling down the wall there. He's going to tell us everything that we need to know.
Good. Well, Lady Mayor, Chairman, ladies, how long have I got, by the way?
Well, half until tea time, which is 3 o'clock.
Right, good. OK, brilliant. Well, firstly, thank you very much for the opportunity coming to speak to you this afternoon about the work of Canine Partners. And I echo what Lady Mayor said. It goes without saying, congratulations on what you're achieving. I work with people with disabilities. I see them every day of the year, and I know what you're achieving. So I really do congratulate you on that. Keep it up. So anyway, Canine Partners. Some of you are sat there now thinking, blimey, I've never heard of them. Fine, that's the reason why I'm here. So we'll start right from the very beginning. I now have 29 minutes to give you the whole story of Canine Partners. I can't beat about the bush. I've got to be in Canary Wharf starting another one of these 8 o'clock deceivers. Talk about the sublime to the ridiculous. Look at this. I'm going to go up there now. So there we are. So Canine Partners. Basically, we go out, we raise money, we buy puppies. They're literally 6, 7 weeks of age. They're this big. They've all got little tiny purple jackets on. And everyone goes gaga because it's a puppy. And then we train it to be a fully qualified assistance dog. Now, many of you have got dogs, no dogs, got friends, neighbours, relatives got a dog. Just think for a moment how many different commands the dogs that you know will be able to complete on a regular basis. So you can say, sit as 1, stay as 2, fetch as 3, give us a paw, it might do, roll over, possibly 5, eat, do one of those, 6, and then it starts to get a little difficult. At Canine Partners, once we finish training these dogs, each and every dog on graduation will be able to open and close doors, drawers, cupboards, use light switches, lift buttons, cash machines, undress people, pick things up. And then we give them to somebody we know as a partner. These people who suffer from multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, ataxia, cerebral palsy, stroke, spine. You're not writing this lockdown, are you? Good God. I'll be checking the spelling. More recently, of course, in the last 6, 7 years in particular, we've been working very closely with the charity Help for Heroes, sponsoring service personnel coming back in particular from Afghanistan. 19 soldiers so far have one of our dogs, and 4 more coming through the system. So we have partnerships right across the country, right across Hampshire. We have 2 in Winchester at this moment and 3 on the waiting list. So the same this afternoon, we've got somebody just around the corner. We'll say we've got somebody called, Peter. And we'll say Peter's got a dog called, you name it, I'll get fed up with this bit. Dog's name, your turn, go quick.
Bingo.
Rover. I've got a long day today. Rover. Right, okay. Well, say Peter has multiple sclerosis, has very little upper limb movement. He can operate a power chair, sadly, very little else. He'll wake up days such as this, his wife's got to work, the kids have gone to school, he's got a long day, lonely day, perhaps a depressive day. He has a degenerative disease. He knows what's going on in his life. The next thing you see, bottom of the bed, Labrador, Rover, tail wagging. Dogs don't do depression. Can't be done with it, not going to listen. He's not even interested. And Rover, like all of our dogs, have come up onto the bed, pull back the duvet, go around to the side, and if we require, stand rigidly still, so we can gently lean on him and get himself into a power chair. Go through to the kitchen. Beginning of the day, as I mentioned, any doors, drawers, cupboards the dogs need to open, all clothes will have a tuggy, tassel, piece of rope on them. Peter, like many of our partners, is unable to open his own back door. So Rover would do this, just tug on the handle, open the door, go out into the garden, whereby he would toilet on command. The dogs only ever go to toilet when they're told to do so. No other time where that function takes place. And it's very important. Geographically, it can be a town centre situation where not suitable for toilets in a dog. And sadly, of course, being in a wheelchair, you're never going to be in a position to clear up after you. So one of the first things to teach all the puppies, 11, 12 weeks of age, is to toilet on command. However, because I do not have a dog here this afternoon, and believe you me, these dogs have a wicked sense of humour. I can tell you what that command is, and it's quite simply, better go now then. If he needs to, he will. He'll come back in. Breakfast time. Look at our partners unable to feed our dogs from a wheelchair perspective, place, retrieve anything to ground level, it's sadly never going to happen. So the dogs, Rover, will feed himself. Rover will go to a kitchen cupboard, set up the sink, naturally please give him a food bowl, little tuggy on the cupboard door, he will open it, take out the bowl, and close the door behind them. And that really is essential. It's all very well having these dogs going around the homes, how many doors, drawers, cupboards. They don't close things, it's going to create an obstacle, a hazard to the partner, the person in the chair. So it's important these dogs, like us men, put things straight back where we find them. WI tomorrow, I never worked so well. At the end of the meal, you and I just bend down and pick up the bowl, but our partners are unable to, so the dogs, Rover, will pick it up for himself. But Rover, using his mouth, won't pick it up from the nearest point, the natural thing to do, otherwise he just flap in front of his eyes and he can't see where he's walking. So simple to look at, difficult to train, get the dogs to pick it up from the furthest point. So the bowl's under his chin, place it to Peter Slap, who can put it into a sink. They're going to go out. Yale locks, chub locks on the front door and extend the metal bar, a longer tuggy this time. Rover will open the front door, allow Peter to go through on the outside of the tuggy, just pull it closed. Go down your arm paths, gates, latches, left, right, but dogs, by the way, are left or right pawed, the same as we are left or right handed. So we're not bothered which incisors are used, but they open the gate, allow Peter to go through, and close the gate behind them. Going down a high street. Now you and I use pedestrian traffic light buttons without even thinking about it. Just walk up, press the button and wait. But Peter's unable to. So all of the dogs are told to operate traffic light buttons. Again, left board, right board with the mouse, it doesn't matter. They hit that red button every single time, bringing the lights to red, allowing Peter to go safely across the road. And the next time you use one of these, look at the size of it. Smaller than 10 pence piece, metal casing, dogs hit it every time. Once you've gone across your road, your local shops. No, I do not know Littleton, I live down on the coast of City Sussex. I'm always moaning about this. If you get a wheelchair inside your local newsagent, that's a result in itself. And yet I've seen this on countless occasions. Go down your local shop, newspapers, daily items, just stacked on the floor. But you're in a wheelchair. 3 or 4 inches away from picking up such a simple thing, yet it may as well be in another street. And one of the worst things about having a disability, it's being constantly reminded by it, to admit to it, to have to ask someone to help you out. Excuse me, can you pass me the paper? I'm unable to reach it for myself. So all of the dogs are taught to identify and retrieve a whole range of items. In this instance, Rover will pick up the paper and bring it back to Rover will pick up the Daily Mail and place it onto Peter's lap. You have to point to the Daily Mail, he can't read yet, but he will bring it to him. And again, going around your local supermarket, any items out of reach for the partners, the dogs will go and get it, whether it's jars of coffee, tins of soup, pack of soup, loo rolls, kitchen rolls, bags of flour. Well, I don't know why I said that. Bags of flour made of paper, make an almighty mess. Made of paper, put straight into Elton Peter's basket on his lap. And then when they get to the checkout, this is the wonderful thing. Peter and Robin shopping every Tuesday afternoon. They've been doing it for years. Rover doesn't need telling. He'd go to the rucksack at the back of the chair, have a real good rummage around. But he won't pick out the mobile phone or the newspaper, the keys, house keys. He will, though, pick out Peter's wallet, present to the cashier, take the money out, put the change in, put it back into his mouth, whereby he would jump down, place it to hand, or in Peter's case, into the rucksack, whichever the command may be. So they're going to go and play, exercise, get across the park, very important, dog welfare is right at the top of the list. Then going back home, through the gates, through the front doors, the dogs take off their own jackets, and then of course go out into the garden, whereby they were toilet on command. Now all these things that happen to every single partnership right across the country, our two in Winchester, today, so we're sat here, right now, they may not be shopping, fine. But at the very least, every partner achieves today is to get out of bed and walk their dog. But if you think about it, Peter's done this and far more besides. He's gone out of bed, but he's got himself dressed. Rover's brought his clothes to him. He's toileted the dog, he's fed the dog, he's gone down the local shop, he's bought the paper, had a chat with people, done the Waitrose shop, and is back home with Rover. His wife isn't there, carers aren't there, neighbours aren't making a fuss. Independence getting bigger and bigger all of the time. Simple to you and I, but absolutely massive to these people. So Peter's got back home, he's got the afternoon off to watch a bit of television until, of course, he goes into the kitchen and finds one of these wonderful things. You ladies leave us men folk when we think we got a bit of peace, called a list. And on the list is do the washing. All of the dogs are told to operate washing machines. It's actually one of the simpler things we teach them to do. Left board, right board of the mouths, it doesn't matter. That door is opening in a flash. One of the hardest things to teach a dog to do without any doubts whatsoever is to consistently walk backwards. Dogs do not like walking backwards. We don't, they have no need to, but Rover's got 2 foot of body, tail out with a linen basket with a tuggy full of washing, and he's got to drag it to underneath the machine. And a far more important occasion whereby we need a dog to walk backwards, say for stroke patients. We have many stroke patients. Say for a moment, Peter's a stroke patient, led in bed in the morning, carer's got stuck in traffic. Me, Rover, go and get the tuggy, about a foot long, bring it onto the bed, place it to Peter's hands. They have the strength to walk backwards down the bed, tugging Peter into a seated position, going around the side, being leant on, so he can get into his chair. So, simple to look at, difficult to train, is a dog walking backwards. But anyway, back to the washing, nice day, better get it done again. Tails are working all day long. You drag it to underneath the machine, load it with mouth and paws, and close the door. They hit the cycle button. This is something I've seen on countless occasions. I've got a whole bank of washing machines up at the training centre. And more recently, just last week, I was picking up one of our partners called Christine Mildenhall. Christine has a dog called Reagan. She is 28, she has cerebral palsy, lives independently, and we were going out to a U3A meeting together. And I was early, traffic was good, never know nowadays what's going to happen. So she said, "Oh, come in, Mark, we've got bags at home, have a cup of tea." "Great. So how are you?" "Fine, thank you." "So where's Reagan?" "Oh, he's in the kitchen doing the washing." I said, "Can I go and say hello?" She said, "Yeah, of course you can, because once they've loaded the machine, closed the door, pressed the button, they sit down and they watch it like a television." "What do they?" I said, "Watch it go, backwards, backwards." "You can drop a pen, he's too busy now." And then the spin cycle starts up, they're really getting excited. So watching this, get slower and slower and slower. And then they just wait for click. And immediately, doors open, heads inside, out come the tails here, in the basket, still tail wagging, walking backwards, drag it through that door, across the garden, to underneath the washing line. And you're the next mayor. It takes forever for a dog to hang washing. It's just never going to happen. But thankfully, on the disability market, there are washing lines that can come down the waist height. Similarly for Rover, any of our dogs, get an article of Peter's lap, peg it out, done the washing on his own, with his dog. Again, his wife's not there, the carers aren't making the fuss, neighbours aren't looking over the fence, "Oh, Peter, I'll be round, give you a hand." He doesn't need a hand, they're doing it together. They're achieving, succeeding, putting things back into their lives, back into their homes, something they never thought they were to do again. But I must say now, while I think of it, the charity, we are not trying to replace carers. May sound as though we are, it's never going to happen. We're reducing carers' hours and visits. Of course we are. We're increasing independence, quality of life, success, achievement for our partners. Absolutely. But we're never, ever going to replace a carer. If you think about it, our Rover's never going to wash your hair. He's never going to cook your lunch. He's never going to go and eat it. He's not going to cook it. But the beautiful thing about having one of these dogs is the fact you can love them, you can kiss them, you can stroke the hair as much as you like. Carers get fed up with that after a while. So how do we get that? Don't write that down. Well, basically, how do we get there? Well, like all charities, like yourselves, we all have to raise money. As soon as we get to a magical figure of £500, that triggers the fact that we can go and buy a puppy. And then we go and give these puppies to volunteers. Like yourselves, we are propped up by volunteers, we have 400 across the country, which makes us very cost effective. We're absolutely cold-blooded about it. And we train these people to train the dog. And the nearest volunteer training centre to here is Totten, just straight down the road there, not far, 20 minutes away, that's all. So please do consider this. All of you could be a puppy parent, all of you know somebody could be a puppy parent, even if it's just for a weekend. Kids call it sleepovers, we call it puppy swaps. We move them around deliberately. It may well be that, oh, Rover at 14 weeks and living in a large house, then he comes out to Littleton, where you live in a bungalow. And he walks up your garden path on the Friday afternoon, he's got his rucksack, he's got his bag of food, he's banging on the door, blimey, someone stole it upstairs. Where's the garden gone? Who are you? It's all part of their training. At this stage, we do not know where they're going to end up, so please do consider that. We move around all the time. So you may have grandchildren, cats, other dogs, absolutely ideal. So once they are trained, they've seen it all before, it's all part of the growing-up process. So the puppies will be with the puppy parents for around a year, as I say, dotted around. And then after that, all of the dogs come back to our national training centre over at Midhurst, just across on the 272, for a further 20 weeks full-time training with professional trainers. At this point, we'll teach them the finer things we need them to achieve. Things like light switches, lift buttons, gas machines, I mean, dressing. I was helping out the trainers just last week, where I go sit down in a wheelchair while they're on a tea break. I'm not a trainer, by the way, not by any means am I a trainer. I don't even like dogs, to be honest with you. And you sit, and you'll never know the truth to that. You sit down in a chair, and it's obvious to say this, but you cannot see your feet. But the instruction we've been given to come and take your shoes off, but all you can see is a tail waving around in front of you. But the next thing you feel, and I've been doing this 12 years, it's the strangest feeling. You're sat there, you're not moving yourself, all you can feel is the shoe just coming off your foot. The next thing you see, especially a Labrador, of course, it just goes flying through the air as far as it can throw it. But it's a puppy in training, it's fun, it doesn't matter. Then they get hold of your sock. But they are so, they scratch, they never ever do. They get hold of your sock, just tuck, 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 and take it off completely. The other side, tuck, 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 and away. Go and find your slippers. Now, we've all seen dogs in the park go and pick up a ball and a stick, bring it back to their owner. And next time, have a closer look. Follow it all the way through, because it's very rare that a pet dog are bringing that article back and place it into the owner's hands. They put it down there, they make you bend over, do the last 2 feet. They're not daft, these things. But all of our dogs are taught bring everything back to hand, to lap, or for the stroke patient, the tray on the chair. Otherwise, this relationship is never going to work out. But Rover will go and get your slipper, but he's been told to pick it up toe end first so that he places it onto the foot plate of the chair, heel first, the right way around. Peter can put his foot inside it. Go and get the other one, put it on the... They may get left and right mixed up. Well, of course he will. So we get him to change it. It doesn't matter. Peter's in his lounge, it's warm, it's light, it's dry, cricket's on the television. It's not ringing that bell for his wife to come in and do it for him. And that, thinking about it, is probably the most significant thing I'm going to mention this afternoon, is that bell on the chair. All of our partners say this. Before they had a dog, they know they've dropped the mobile phone and it's going off, but they can't retrieve it. And ringing that bell is an admittance, that, as they perceive it, of their disability, but also being a burden on their loved one. Peter knows his wife's in the kitchen trying to get dinner ready, but the mobile's on the floor, so's the pen, everything's gone wrong. So they invariably don't use it. But once they have a dog, of course, that bell goes into a drawer and it's never used again. So it's independence, not just for the partners, but for husbands, wives, children, relatives, neighbours. It goes out far wider than that because Peter's got the dog. They're getting through the day together. They're achieving, succeeding, and not being, as he perceives it, a nuisance and a pressure on the people around. They're getting through and doing it all the time. So once we finish the course, what will happen then is the applicants will come across again to Midhurst, our national centre, where we have on-site accommodation for a 2-week residential course. They will travel over on the Sunday evening, have dinner with the volunteers on duty, then on the Monday morning after breakfast in a room similar in size to this, they will go in there after breakfast, where it's apparent straight away that there isn't a dog in sight. Because what's going to happen next is the dogs will come in and the dogs pick the partners, not the other way around. The dogs pick that human. They have the final say. We've trained them to do all these things, but you cannot manufacture this relationship. It's got to be a natural bonding. The dogs pick the partners. And just to give you an example, and I was reminded about this a couple of months ago, I've just seen a signpost for it. We've got a partnership created last year called Graham in Basingstoke. Graham I met around last June time. Huge man. Only young. Really, really big lad. In a manual chair. And I said to him on the Monday morning, I said, blimey, Graham, I said, how did you end up in this thing? And he said, well, I was a prop forward for Basingstoke, rugby club, and the scrum collapsed, severed my spine, and that's it. I'm never going to walk again, I'm trying to find a new job, and just everything's, the independence has gone, everything's just not very good, really. I'm like, good God. And I was trying to cheer him up. And I said, well, don't worry, Graham. I said, hey, we're going to get you a dog in a moment. He said, oh, Malcolm, I know that. I said, I've already seen mine anyway. I said, have you done that? He said, well, I looked through the curtains this morning, outside was a couple of black Labradors. One of those would be ideal. I went, oh, so you like black Labs? He went, no, I've never had a dog. But I want to go back down the club, you know, sit in the bar, so just think black Labrador next to the chair, pint in my hand, looked quite good for my image, really. That's all I was thinking of. I went, well, I can relate to that. So I went and spoke to the trainers. They didn't really grasp it. And they said, well, put him nearest the door, don't say why, and we'll put the two black Labs in first. Oh, good idea. Brilliant. So I did. And I stayed. I never ever stayed. I'm not part of this side of life. I got on very well with Graham. So I stood in the corner, well outside there. The door opened. I watched this first black man. You could see the expression on the eyes and the ears going, blimey, he's absolutely huge, that one. I picked a woman. Down there it was. Gone. The second one came in, just taunted around. I think, no, I don't think so. Either. And just went straight over there. Oh, no. The next three dogs, three, four, five, all retrievers, came in, walked around Graham, picked out other partners. The very last dog on the course was the only poodle. This poodle, she walked through the door, she didn't even look in any direction, she looked straight at the door, I'll be back in a minute, disappeared, come back, pen, tennis ball, mobile, all this stuff come on his lap, none of it was his, she was just showing off. And he now has, still has, Noodle the poodle. But he was so disappointed. I could feel the stress. I thought he was just going to wheel himself out. But once the dogs have completed their task, they're all told to come back and sit next to the chair. After a real short period of time. And by now, I wasn't even looking. I didn't know what to do. It all gone wrong. Been a disaster. And yet, I just caught, at the corner of my eye, Graham's hand over the side of the chair and stroke her head. It took her 1 minute to break him down. And I've been back to the rugby club since just Christmas. Just gone. And it's an amazing experience I had there. Because I wasn't expecting it, but they were fundraising for ourselves, the club, the rugby players, and they all dicky bow ties that didn't fit and parts in the hand. And at the end of the, and it wasn't choreographed, it really wasn't, but at the end of the evening, Noodle Graham herself said a very quick thank you, and they just all came forward. And it was an amazing experience, because they all said the same thing. Will you go back and thank the people that donated the money that bought Noodle? The volunteers that trained her, because we've got Graham back. We were on that pitch last season, we saw him carded off, we haven't seen him since. Now he's got Noodle, he's up here all the time. We've got his sense of humour, his friendship, his camaraderie, all these things, because Noodle's dragged this out. Noodle's not bothered about last year, or even yesterday. She's only bothered about now. And that's such a simple thing to say, but most effective. We can train a dog, we're world leaders that train dogs to all the physical side of life, but the emotional side, money can't buy that. We're all in that position to create it happening for it to take place. But it's, you can't just write a cheque for that. It doesn't work that way. So basically what's happened now is Rover's picked up Peter. Rover knows anything up to 100 commands. Peter sadly doesn't. So the first day they picked each other, and we start taking them to town centres where these dogs are allowed anywhere in this country by law. And then later on that evening, we'd take them back to their rooms, whereby they stay with their dogs, whereby no practising is encouraged whatsoever. And this is important. These people tire easily. They may have to have an afternoon sleep to regain mental energy. So no practicing is encouraged. And I did this last week, on week two now, but last week we just started the latest course. I always volunteer for the night shift, first couple of nights, Monday, Tuesday, because it's great fun, to be honest with you. The trainers go down the village pub, I know where that is, I've got my own supply, saves the walk, makes sense as far as I'm concerned. And it really is good fun, because you walk down the corridor and all you can hear is Peter saying to Rover, right, number 29, light switch, 15, blind, keys, what's all? Of course he's practicing, it's human nature, even though we discourage this, you've got to let it happen. So I don't say anything to the trainers, no real harm done. But then one thing I do insist on, 10 o'clock, lights out. Peter's going to sleep with Rover for the very first time. Peter may well have never had a dog in his life. That's not unusual. It's going to be a disturbed night, broken sleep. Of course it is. But we've got to give it the best chance we can. So 10 o'clock, lights out. Then invariably what happens? I was thinking about it earlier. I think it happened to me this morning. Except my wife said it was far too early. It was dark. I wasn't listening and it wasn't true anyway. But apparently some men snore. What will happen? Peter's quite happily snoring away, then he stops. Rover goes, hell's bells, I've only known him for a day, he's dead already, press the panic button on the wall, the lid's up and up, and everything will go on. Myself, the trainers, I go straight down the corridor, red light outside Peter's, will go straight in, by now Peter's bolt up of bed, 2 o'clock in the morning, go, blimey, Malcolm, what's wrong with this dog? He's pressed everything in the room. So right, just calm down. Get Rover onto the bed, stroke him, reassure him, get that tail wagging. He's done something we've told him to do. He's spotted a change in your breathing and he's responded without any commands whatsoever. So it's very important that myself, the trainers, the first one, we take a backward step, we leave the room. These two have got to start to get on now and congratulate and learn about each other. I do not walk round with a pocket full of treats at 2 o'clock in the morning. If I was to walk round with a pocket full of ham at 2 o'clock in the morning, Rover's going to treat me like some sort of room service. Feel a bit peckish, I press that button and that bloke comes in. Oh no, he doesn't. So then we have a 2-week residential course. We get them through this. We take them anywhere in the country. As I mentioned, these dogs are allowed anywhere in this country by law. And that's where we take them. Hospitals, schools, buses, trains, taxis, supermarkets, Chinese restaurants, up and down lifts, cross the roads. Dozens and dozens and dozens of times. It's a difficult course. We make it so on purpose, but they will get through. And once they have passed the course, we do not leave it there again. We have volunteers that will go out and do a home visit, basically every couple of months, just a cup of tea, it's not an inspection, just checking things as well as they could be. Many disabilities, MS in particular, far worse in the 7 months for many of our patients, whereby a handmaid just sees up for a few weeks. So then that volunteer report back to the charity. We would send out the nearest trainer, Totten, in this instance, and get Rover to bring everything to the left-hand side. So the dog's not getting stressed out, the partner's likewise. It's a moving target, we move with it. Always checking the dog's abilities, as I say, are matched up to the partner's disabilities. So, that is the operational side of the charity. Just in 1 minute, I can give you the financial side. We do not receive any government funding or grants, whatever. But we do, thank goodness, have three major sponsors, the National Lottery, Zurich Bank, and Nestle Purina. The lottery. We bought the land over at Midhurst some 12 years ago, just as I joined the charity, off a chicken farmer. We knocked down the sheds, and the lottery gave us £560,000 to build a state-of-the-art set. And that's just bricks and mortar. We own the land. And it's an amazing setup. It really is. All the floors are heated so that the dogs' paws don't get cold in winter. They've thought of everything. There's dogs, showers for the dogs in advanced training. They just walk in, the lights come on, the water stops. They're in there for hours some of these days. I don't know what they're doing in there. There's a kitchen for the dogs in advanced training. Solid oak, this kitchen. Why it's solid, I haven't got a solid oak. They've got a solid oak kitchen. There's a lift to the first floor. The dogs use that. The staff have to walk it. We then have Zurich Bank, just along the south coast there in Fareham predominantly, as well as their headquarters in Swindon. They sponsor predominantly our salaries. There are only 22 of us paid in this charity. The other 400 are volunteers. And we're a national charity, so we really are this small, very, very cost effective. And they also sponsor the vehicles, that car I've got outside, including the diesel that goes in it. When that thing needs filling up, Zurich paid for that. It means donations go to buying puppies. And we're very thankful to be able to say that. And then last but not least, Nestle Purina. Purina are the world's largest pet food particular dog food manufacturer. They sponsor the Purples, stuff that we wear. The things like Christmas cards, that's something. There's some magazines at the back, so they only come out twice a year. So please take one of those to read later. And then, of course, things like the dog jackets, the dog leads, the dog training aids, and, of course, the dog food. Inside the magazine, you see a little article that says information sessions. Basically, they're open days over at Midhurst, not far from here. They're on set days of the year, no charges. You're most welcome as a group or individuals, whereby we'll give you a presentation where you can see the puppies doing all these things, meet the partners, have a quick chat. So it lasts around an hour. It's very fast moving, so if you do wish to come along, then please just contact the charity, email, phone, the usual ways, and we'll organise that for you. And in actual fact, think about it, is you have been really good fun this afternoon. If I'm giving the presentation that you actually are there for, just mention yourself. I will personally make sure that each and every one of you receives a bag of dog food for making the trip across the... No, I'm serious. It doesn't matter if you've got a dog or not. I'm not interested. Each and every one of you get a bag of dog food, if I'm giving that presentation, is a thank you for coming over. So I mentioned Purina, sponsor, give us all the food. What we've not had the heart to tell them yet is the dogs don't like it. So we're shocked that we will. But anyway, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to wait. Don't want you to wait too long for your sherry. So I will start to wrap it up there. But if you can take just one thing with you, and you're honestly, obviously fantastic at what you're doing, and we all help each other, and we all spread the word for each other, of course we do. But if you're members of any other group, organisation, U3As, Rotaries, WIs, whatever, locally, then I've got some cards in the car. Please pass on my details. I'd be delighted to come out. We are training here, so the more people that know about us, the better chance we have of succeeding getting volunteers that way. We do not spend any donations on newspaper advertising. Waste of money, we could buy a puppy for that. So if you do know of any other groups, organisations, then please take a card up. So I'll go and get them, and that'd be great news. But once again, Chairman, I don't think we've got time for questions, but thank you all very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Treasurer. Other questions? question? Do we have time for questions?
Yes, we do.
Yes, good. Oh, well. Yes.
How many thousand commands actually are there?
I'm sorry?
How many thousand commands?
How many thousands?
Yes. In the training.
I didn't mention thousands.
It sounds like you need thousands.
No, no.
How many are there, seriously?
Well, there isn't a finite amount, because we don't teach a dog to do everything it needs it to do.
Right.
Excuse me one moment.
We may have a stroke patient that's paralysed on the right-hand side, which is often the case. So all the dogs have to bring everything to the left-hand side, although they're taught to bring everything to both sides. But once we've got the patient list coming through, we're starting to train the dogs with all those disabilities in mind. So it might be a whole row of people that are paralysed down the right. So we won't teach the dog anything to do right-handed, because it's a pointless exercise. Other dogs have got to do the two. So there's no finite thing here at all.
There's not a number
no.
that it can cope with?
No.
Right.
No.
Where did the puppies come from initially?
Breeders. Basically, nationwide. Breeders have contacted ourselves and say, I think I've got a puppy here showing the signs of being good enough, and away we go.
And how long did they stay with the person?
About a year. With the puppy parents, about a year.
No,
with the partner. It depends, again, on the disability. If it's someone like our Peter with Rover, where Rover's doing what we call all the upper limb work, the light switches, the lift buttons, the traffic lights, around 9 years. Someone like our Graham with Noodle, who's in a manual chair, because he's physically very fit from the waist up, that's his way of keeping fit, so he can use these things, but Noodle's got to pick up all the dropped items, we call it, put another year onto that, so he's not working so hard. So again, there's no finite time, it depends on how hard the dog's working. We monitor this all the way down.
And then what happens to the dogs when...
Oh, we shoot them. Don't worry that down here. This could be my last one, this. No, we don't shoot them. No. Actually, that's a very good point. I don't use notes and I use my memory, but I did mention that. I mentioned puppies. All of you could have a retired dog. Excellent point. But honestly, fantastic, because they'll be retired around 9 years of age, 10 years of age. It's still going to toilet on command down the bottom of your garden. He's going to get your post out of your letterbox and bring it upstairs to bed if you want it or not. It's been doing it all its life. It doesn't understand the word retired. So consider having a retired dog. They always go to a loving home. It'd be the best decision you've ever... I mean, they're brilliant at shoplifting. I mean, just send it down the house. Absolutely great. Yeah, fine. Good. Yes.
I should ask you, when the dog is lodged with its next partner or care or whatever it is, do the volunteers go and check up on them every now and then to make sure that they're
once it's retired?
Yeah. No. When they're with their work.
Yeah, absolutely. Every couple of months. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes.
Are there any breeds of dogs that are absolute no-nos for the job?
Oh, can I turn it around the other way? The breeds that we do use, rather than go through a list of 100. The dogs that we use are Labradors, Retrievers, Labradoodles, Labrador Poodle Cross, Retroodles, Retriever Poodle Cross. We like the gun dog breeds, basically, because that's what they do. They're used to searching, retrieving. They recognise hard objects, soft objects, could be your mobile phone, could be a handkerchief, could be a pencil. They're very intelligent, patient, diligent, repetitive, again, a fine attribute. For gun dogs, when they're looking for things, they keep doing it. Someone like Peter, MS, can be doing a crossword, drop a pen 3 times in a minute. These breeds will keep bringing them back. Other breeds, nothing wrong with them, fantastic pets, can get a bit bored. Can start thinking, blimey, that's the 3rd time now. I can't. But that could be an asthma inhaler, it could be the warden-assisted button, it could be the mobile phone that needs to come back. But Labradors and Retrievers will keep doing this time and time again. And there's also a size issue, thinking about it as well. We like the dogs around 22, 26 inches in height, around 30 kilograms. So they've got to do pretty heavy work, opening your back door, your front door, tugging Peter into a seated position in bed. I mean, the dead weight of a human in bed and tugging forward. There's a certain size and fitness of a dog you need to be able to achieve that. And when you're going out for a walk and doing your shopping, you're going down the high street and using a traffic light, but just, well, blimey. It's pointless having a chihuahua trying to press a traffic light. It's just going to run and jump, miss, get run over, and it's a really bad day. So they're the breeds that we go for, basically.
Malcolm, that was not only entertaining, but inspiring, and thank you so much.
Yeah, you need to get help.